Delilah. I'm Jane, and my lover, I don't know where he's going, and I want you to play a song.
He just drove away in his Ford F-150. Yeah. Could you play Bruce Springsteen?
Blah, Born blah. In the USA.
Yeah. I may never see him again, but it's his favorite song.
Yeah. And I hope in the USA.
Of course, Sharon, I can. I wish you luck with that. This is Delilah.
Rocking the big 3-0 on the podcast today, and pretty excited about it as our co-owner and founder Eric joins us again.
Hey guys.
So last time Eric was with us, we were in Guatemala recording a special kind of origin episode, and that was a lot of fun. Today we're going to do the history of Stone Creek Coffee with Eric, and it looks like he brought stuff for show and tell.
Sure did.
Yeah, before we get into that, don't forget to go on iTunes where you can get all of our other episodes, including the one I was talking about. We titled that one Farm to Cup. And also leave us a review while you're there. That would be cool for you to tell us what you think about the podcast. You can also email us podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com with any questions or topic ideas you have. And finally, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram @StoneCreekCoffee. We like to play on the social medias. So all of that kicks us off, and we are today tasting a little something from Eric. We tried a whiskey when we kicked this thing off, and then our last episode, Christian made us try this terrible thing that they drink during D&D games. Yeah. So now, actually, we get to drink something fun. So, Eric, what are we drinking, man?
So I brought in two of my favorite beers right now. One is a Wisconsin beer and one is from Oregon. So on your left is the non-Wisconsin beer that I'm digging on, and it's from Deschutes Brewing out in Bend, Oregon. And what I love about this beer is that it has this amazing sort of grapefruit taste. And when I first had this beer, this is their fresh squeezed IPA. When I first had this, I thought that for sure that they had put grapefruit juice in it somehow, or infused it, or did something like that. It turns out they didn't. There's actually three different malts in here and three different hops. And in a way, kind of like coffee, the hops and the malt really drive the ultimate cup. And just like coffee, terroir and the variety of coffee tree processing drives the ultimate cup as well. So this is pretty wild, easy drinking. Interesting, this has a 6.3 APV and only a 65 IBU, so only 65 bitter units. So the hops and the balance with the malt is really pretty nice. The
first time I ever had this beer was brunch at Engine Company number 3 on National. I really liked it. Like, it's a kind of fantastic brunch beer, really refreshing, replaces orange juice really nicely. So, had you had this one?
I've had this one a few times. I think I had it for the first time at Camino on 2nd Street, and I think there's Citra hops in here.
Citra, Mosaic, and Nugget.
Yeah, Citra and Mosaic are two hops I'm really digging. And if I see that's in a beer, I'm usually going straight towards it. And actually, there's a brewery that just opened up in Milwaukee. They have a Mosaic Pale Ale. It's really good. Good city.
Cool.
We were there yesterday.
Yeah, and then the other one I brought in is from Carbon 4. So this is sort of a friend of mine. Buddies opened this brewery in Madison. It's called Fantasy Factory, and what's unique about this one, it actually has similar APV, 6.4, and the IBUs are 60, so very similar in terms of sort of the technical on it. This one has Citra also. It's got Cluster and one other one I can't read my writing. The other unique thing about this is it's a cloudy. You can see it's got a little bit of a cloudy, so they don't fully let the yeast settle during processing. So it also has one malt, Golden Promise, which is grown in Scotland. And so this is kind of a hybrid of a traditional sort of American IPA or West Coast IPA with that sort of deeper, rounder Scottish ale malt. And I'm just digging on both of these right now. And also digging on their label. Of course, everybody loves the Fantasy Factory label, which...
The cat riding the unicorn, holding the gun.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
This may be our cover photo for this episode.
It's pretty cool.
I've seen this one around, but I actually haven't tried it before.
yeah, as I said, that yeast. I think like coffee, you know, we look for sweet, clean, and juicy. I think the very best IPAs have a balance of that malty, caramely sweetness along with the right balance of hops. And if either one gets out of balance, it can be too bright or too flat.
It's one of the crazy West Coast IPAs where they just like jam it full of hops. Right. You're drinking this like, this bitter sour bomb. It's no good.
It's like a lemonade.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly beats whatever that minty whatever thing was. I've got a guide to kind of take us through today's episode, which I think is important because, well, now we've got 50 minutes left and we're going to try and get through the entire history of Stone Creek Coffee, at least up until a year ago when you started listening to the podcast. Or when we started recording it. So, Eric, we'll just try and kick in with witty banter as we can. While you kind of take this one over, but and I did give Eric this outline so he could kind of prep accordingly.
Yeah.
Start us off.
Yeah, so my love of coffee, nobody in my house growing up drank coffee, not even my grandparents. So, unfortunately, I didn't get exposed to coffee until I... You know, really till I arrived in Madison for college and a few too many beers and some homework to do, I'd end up at the coffee shop on State Street, and there were a number of them. I went to Madison from 1988 to 1992. Steepenbrew was there, Cafe Royale, Victor Allen's, and I used to go to Cafe Royale and get a coffee with just loads of milk and then sort of jack it up with sugar, and I just loved the scene. I mean, that was really my introduction to a coffee house, to a coffee scene. And when I finished college, I, like many of us, didn't exactly know what to do with my life, and I graduated from the business school with also a major in sociology. I ended up buying a blue suit at Sears, which was terribly uncomfortable.
Yeah, I can't imagine you own a blue suit.
Maybe JCPenney, I can't remember,
yeah.
Down out at Westtown. And, you know, when you button that top button on your shirt and you cut off part of your oxygen, you realize that maybe that's not your life course. So what I ended up doing after graduation is I loaded up my mom's 1983 or 80 or 79, got on the nose Camry, and I drove out to Seattle and spent the summer out there just trying to sort it out and figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, that was sort of the heyday of Starbucks. They were just launching in Chicago. They had stores in Seattle. And the scene, you know, dark coffee scene out in Seattle, there were a lot of places that I would check out. And I just made a lot of notes about what I wanted to do with my life. And it ended up that I decided to stay in coffee. I had also applied to the Peace Corps sort of as a hedge, and I got into the Peace Corps to be a business consultant down in Honduras. So I sort of had to make a choice, go to Honduras and do business consulting or maybe embark on this coffee thing. And I started the coffee thing, and I moved to Chicago, a little closer to home, and started working at Starbucks down at 35 East Wacker, right across from what is now the Trump Tower.
Really? It's a nice area. In spite of the tower.
Yeah.
I don't know if the tower would be so bad if it had a different name on it.
So I just worked 5 to noon and learned the basics of making coffee, and that's kind of how I started in coffee.
How long were you at Starbucks?
I was there about, I don't know, 9 or 10 months or so, and ended up going into their sort of management training program, and I worked 3 to 11, second shift, in essence, out at Wheaton Town Square as a assistant manager, and that's what I was doing when I was starting to think about Stone Creek.
So how do you transfer then from your time at Starbucks to saying, I guess I'm going to move to Milwaukee now and kind of do my own thing?
So it was really just a belief that I wanted to run my own coffee company, and I ended up getting a little bit of money from my grandmother when she passed away, and that's what I used to buy a first coffee roaster, which was the brand was Coffee Per, P-E-R, and a guy named Sherman Dodd built this sort of really enormous, thick-metalled roaster, and I didn't know much about roasting, didn't know what kind to buy, and this seemed like a good one, so I bought it, shipped it to Milwaukee here, and started Stone Creek in 1993.
So were you roasting very long before the first cafe, or were those two things kind of going?
They were going pretty much simultaneously, so this was the fall of 1993, and I bought the roaster, and I installed it. Our first roasting location was up in Grafton in an old flour mill right on the Milwaukee River. I loved the building, and I felt that if I was going to roast coffee, I needed to roast it in a beautiful building, that somehow the coffee would take on sort of the vibe of the building, and I just couldn't do it in a warehouse out in some suburbia. So I did it on the second floor of an old mill, similar to the building we own today.
Mm. So when you started to think about opening that first cafe, was there anybody in particular who you sort of talked to that helped you walk through everything, or did you just use the experience you got from Starbucks to kind of hack your way through it?
Well, I used, you know, all my travels. I'd been taking notes. So I had a pretty good journal of things I wanted to accomplish in the cafe I was going to start. And yeah, certainly I learned some things at Starbucks about operations and training and things like that. And then I also attended a roasting seminar with out at Agtron, which became, you know, one of the industry standards for roast color, with Carl Staub. So I flew to Reno and spent, I don't know, 4 days with him in his warehouse. It looks like I graduated from that January 27th, 1995.
There is a certificate here. Eric brought down a super dusty certificate. Do they still give? Do people still do certificates?
Like, I think we do in our classes. Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
It's pretty awesome.
I didn't graduate from my 200 level.
So yeah, I learned sort of the basics of thermodynamics and water and other things, and that's really, you know, this was obviously after I'd already roasted. So when I got the roaster, I had to take it up to the second floor of this roasting area. I didn't know if the elevator was going to handle it, but what the hell, we went anyway. And I went to plug it in. Of course, you buy a coffee roaster and you're nervous as hell. You got to get 220 installed, and you plug this thing in. And I plugged it in, and the whole thing sparked. And smoke, I'm not kidding, smoke was billowing out of the base of the roaster. So this is my first foray into roasting coffee. The thing is almost on fire. I haven't even roasted yet. And it turns out that I didn't see this, but the cord had fallen out of the shipping crate and had a big cut in it and actually shorted out. And we blew the board, so we ended up spending the next 2 days, and I had a friend of mine helping me who was an electrical engineer. We ended up going to Radio Shack and, like, rebuilding this board. And so finally I roasted my first batch of coffee. I don't remember what kind it was, but it turned from green to brown, and it was a blast. I was nervous. I thought I was going to burn this whole building down because nobody showed me how to roast. I'd never really even seen it before.
So knowing what you know today, how do you think that first batch probably actually tasted?
I think it was probably tipped and baked, but it was probably absolutely delicious.
For what it was.
For what it was, yeah.
Okay, so first cafe,
yeah.
Whitefish Bay,
yeah.
Still there.
Oh,
did that open in 93 too?
Yeah, or? It opened, okay. I think, December 3rd, 1993.
Okay.
So I started roasting in the fall. I had a couple months to learn how to roast, and then we opened this cafe, we built it and opened it, and I roasted coffee at night and worked all day in the cafe.
You keep saying we.
Well, we is always the we of Stone Creek.
Yeah, but was it a we, or was it?
Well, I had a little guy on my shoulder talking to me the whole time. No, I mean, yeah, it was a we. We had a cafe staff, you know, we had a manager, we had a team, and it's always been a we. I mean, prior to that, it was really no we. It was me. It was me roasting and me trying to sort this out, and me going to Pier 1 to get baskets for the muffins.
So I can't imagine. Like, I thought about, I used to think about it. I don't really think about it anymore, but the thought was always, if I get fired from Stone Creek, God forbid, for some weird reason outside of anybody's control, things happen. But if I were to start my own thing, like, where would I start? Because at Stone Creek now, we have the luxury of, you know, there's a lot of tools and resources here, but when you're starting from ground zero, there's, I mean, so many things. Like, was the week you opened going, oh, crap, we don't have that. Oh, crap, we don't have that.
Yeah, I remember we were supposed to open, we did open the first day at 6 in the morning, and we forgot to go to the bank. So we didn't have, right? So you don't have quarters or dimes, and so you open up and you open the drawer, whatever it was back then, a till of some sort, right? And you sort of panic, banks aren't open, people are looking through their purse. You know, that's kind of how it goes.
Do you remember how many customers you had the first day?
I don't, but I do recall that first day before Thanksgiving, or the day before Christmas, or the week before, and we were just pumping out the beans. We had brown bags, we were hand stamping them, and I remember just working the bean counter and
feeling good,
bringing it. I do recall though that I didn't know this, but I ended up having to pay personal property taxes because that gets assessed right at the end of every year.
Oh,
so
man.
I would have been better off to wait till January 1 because all the personal taxes I paid was way more than we made that first 3 weeks. So learned a little lesson there.
Yeah, right. So when you set out to sort of open up this thing, you're starting this cafe, you've got a roaster that you almost lit on fire.
Right. We did light on fire. Yeah.
Right. So we have the luxury, Christian and I, of sort of knowing your MO, like, what do you want to do with this? But for our esteemed listeners, why? Like, sort of, what's the more personal, motivational why behind Stone Creek and coffee? And you even mentioned there was potential of joining the Peace Corps.
Right. So when I was hanging out in the cafes in Madison, you know, as I said, trying to figure out what to do with my life, I knew that I wanted to do something that had an impact on the rest of the world, that hopefully many of us go through life looking for ways to make the world a little bit better. And I felt that I could either go to the Peace Corps and help out for a few years, then come back home and sort of do my coffee thing, or I could just start on the coffee thing. But the coffee thing was really geared towards a coffee mission, but also a social mission. And our corporate name, and some listeners maybe know this, many maybe don't, is Giri Corporation, which is G-I-R-I. And it comes from a Japanese samurai code of honor called Bushido. And the word means social obligation, or to live with a sense of those around you. So that's what we named the company before we even had the words Stone Creek Coffee. There was a corporate name and this sort of underlying mission to impact the world along the way. And we continue to live that way with our sourcing and our employee practices and just the way we run the company. We try to hold true to that value. And so the why of Stone Creek is certainly a personal passion. It's a craft, but as importantly for me personally, it's the fulfillment of this vision of accomplishing something bigger than just myself or just coffee.
Moving to the what, then. So you got the why. The what, you have a cafe and a roaster. Did you have any sort of grand vision of, oh, this maybe is what I want to build one day and it would look like this? I mean, it probably doesn't look like it does now because nothing ever ends up the way you think it will, but
There really was no grand plan. I mean, the grand plan has always been to stay in business long enough to accomplish the goals, you know, like, business is not something that you can just articulate and say, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and then you go do it. I mean, ultimately, you have to articulate what you're trying to do, but there's many adjustments along the way and changes, and Stone Creek has become exactly what I wanted it to become, but it's certainly not what it started out as.
Even though you may not have had, like, a long-term vision, it certainly has evolved, you know, through the first few years as you're trying to figure things out. What were some of the cool things, maybe some of the hard things, like lessons you learned sort of trying to get this business, this coffee business, which is almost unheard of outside of Starbucks and the West Coast at that time, off the ground in Milwaukee?
Some of the hardest things, one thing that I didn't really realize maybe a year into it is things actually break. Like when you're starting a business, you get to buy everything new or semi-new or, you know, whatever, but I didn't realize how much maintenance. I mean, when the fridge goes down or the HVC's not working or your cash register flames out, like, there's a ton of stuff that breaks and sort of how life is, what's the word, entropy. Like, things, right. Things naturally just break. And so what I learned early on is that you have to have a lot of energy that goes to not just building something new, but you have to actually maintain what you have and move that ahead as well. So you kind of have these dual sort of platforms that you're trying to work on. And I just underestimated completely the amount of work. And then I would do all the bookkeeping and accounting after I'd roast. So I'd be, you know, working at night roasting, and then I'd be doing all the accounting. And next thing I got to fill out the sales tax form. And next thing you know, I'm being audited for this. And, like, just the volume was pretty profound. So that was really hard. And I actually had a stomachache for about 12 years. I'm not joking. Like, I have learned that when I get stressed, I get a stomachache. And even today, maybe once a quarter, something will happen in the business, and within about 30 minutes, I'll have a pretty tight stomachache. And I just learned over the years that that's how my body sort of manifests stress and worry. I didn't know that. I thought maybe I was sick or dying or had, you know, some allergic reaction.
Ulcers.
So I had actually lots of tests and barium put places I don't want to talk about, and x-rays and other things.
Barium's crazy. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah, so I was not thrilled. I didn't know what was going on, but I did learn over time as I finally connected the dots that that's how I manage stress. I'd say the best parts were really have always been the people. Like, the coffee's cool, but the coffee is really just a vehicle in my mind for the passions, the craft, the people, the energy, the future. Like, it becomes this sort of lubrication of everybody together.
Lubrication is one of my favorite words.
I will tell you that one of the things, I mean, it's hard to imagine, but when we were running this business early on, you know, there was no internet, right? There were no cell phones. So if that gives you a flavor of how long we've been around.
Another flavor is I was 4 years old when Stone Creek Coffee started.
Yeah, so we had, you know, when we went to multiple cafes from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, you know, those of us who were helping run the business, you know, we couldn't find each other, right? I mean, you have to remember, this was the age of pagers. So we would have pagers. And when we got flip phones, man, we were styling, yeah, right? Like, yeah, we were loving,
like, riding in your convertible, like, selling stocks on the cell phone. Well,
and we didn't have a delivery vehicle. We did it in my my Volkswagen Fox wagon. And the problem with the Fox wagon is it sometimes wouldn't start. So I'd have a load of coffee in the back, and we had to get it to the cafes for the next morning. And I learned to push start it by myself. I'd always park somewhere where I could either go downhill, or I'd have a free runway to get it out, so I'd never parallel park somewhere else. I could push it, jump in, pop the clutch every time, and I'd be fresh coffee would be on its way. That was the way it was. So that's just some of the challenges, I guess, you know. No cell phones and a Fox wagon that didn't start.
Anything else crazy happened those first years? I've heard stories of later backflips off the loading dock that some guy did.
Yeah, he blew his ankle out and killed our workers' comp mod for about 5 years.
Thanks, dude. As the business grew, were there any points that you sort of identify as kind of era setters? Or, like, there's this era of Stone Creek in your mind, and then there's this season of Stone Creek?
I'd say that the eras of Stone Creek, for better or for worse, are driven more by my personal life, because how I engaged with the business and how I worked was driven more by my personal life. In the early years of Stone Creek, I was single and young, and I would work, you know, 7 to 10 at night every day, just hauling ass, trying to keep things running. And then, you know, as the business moved forward and eventually I met my wife, you know, how I work changed, and now with two little kids at home, how I work has changed again, and the business has evolved along with how I've evolved. And yeah, I mean, there is obviously the last 4 years of Stone Creek where we've radically changed the business, which we'll talk about a little bit, but I'd say that in a way it's that and just the last 4 years and everything before.
Summing up sort of the first 17 to 20 years, I mean, Stone Creek, I sort of have this picture of what Stone Creek was the first 20 years. I just assume it was the same those first 20 years. Because I started to experience Stone Creek in 2011. So I caught it right before sort of a major shift. But kind of sum up as best you can the first 20 years. Like, where did you find success, and where did you kind of beat your head against the wall in terms of the business? Like, because it is at the end of the day about building a sustainable business, so...
Yeah, I think the first 20 years were really about hiring great people and letting them do their thing. I mean, it wasn't driven so much by coffee craft as it was by just really great people taking care of our customers. And, you know, we worked pretty hard on speed, knowing that 70% or so of our customers got their drinks to go, and that if we could get them in and out fairly quickly, we could get through the line and we'd see them the next morning. And I would say the other thing, you know, one of my skills is running the business. So there's the coffee side and then there's the business side. And I think part of us being here today is that in the early years, I knew how to manage cash flow, so we never went out of business. Now, we always made a little bit of money every year, but we always had lots of debt. So when I look back at our QuickBooks register, which goes back to the original date, when you scroll down it, it's just bleeding red for years. Like, we were floating checks before the money came in every single week, and I knew exactly how to manage all that. And so I think that persistence and not giving up through those early years when cash was really tight is just one of the successes of the company, even though it really isn't known.
How would you say that Stone Creek kind of competed against its competitors, or did we even have that in mind, or was it just about serving coffee?
Yeah, it wasn't so much about competitors, because in 1993 when we started, there were no other coffee roasters. I mean, there was Northwestern Coffee Mills.
What?
Yeah, down in the Third Ward, and what's his name? I'll think of it in a minute. Anyway, he had moved up to Madeline Island and moved his roasting, but that was the only coffee roaster in Metro Milwaukee at the time. And yeah, so there really were no competitors when we opened to speak of. Altera opened the same summer we did. And then a few others obviously have come online since, but that was about it in the early days.
Was there even Starbucks in Milwaukee at the time?
No, I mean, Starbucks, when I had left Starbucks, Starbucks was only in Seattle and Chicago. They only had about 50 stores. They had just done their IPO. So, you know, Starbucks didn't hit Milwaukee until probably the late 90s.
Wow, that's crazy to think.
Yeah, now there's...
It's not been that long.
40 or 50 of them here.
Oh, at least. Yeah. At least. All right, so 20 years into the business, you wake up. Did you, like, eat something weird the night, like, one night? You had a funny dream and then decided you were going to change everything about Stone Creek Coffee. So I say we're totally different now than we were. And a lot of people, I had somebody in an interview the other day who lived here, like, 5 years ago, and they say, you guys are completely different. Yeah, we are. So before we get to the what, talk about the why there. Why change?
Yeah, so we were coming up on our 20th anniversary, and, you know, and most anniversaries are moments of reflection. I had recently been married. I had a small son at home, and my wife and I were just talking about the future and what kind of life we wanted first and foremost, and how did Stone Creek fit into it. And one of the things I decided in those moments was that if we were going to do this, we were going to do it really well. That it wasn't sort of a do it in a way where you can pay rent and make some income, or do it in a way that you can make boatloads of money. We wanted to do it in our way, and our way really came down to building a coffee company that we were super proud of, and then building a coffee company that I felt personally was beautiful. And by beautiful, I just mean physically beautiful, but elegant in how it runs and process and how clean the mop sinks are to how clean the vents are. Like, I have a real thing with beauty, and I felt like we hadn't achieved that goal. So that was sort of the personal side of it. And then the business side, you know, I've been watching the data. We had seen, as I said, 40 or 50 Starbucks open in Metro Milwaukee. There were a lot of local guys opening up shops. And then you remember sort of the McCafe, Panera era, where Subway started doing coffee in the morning. Like, everybody was coming online with quote-unquote specialty coffee. And our business, we were tracking customer counts over a five-year period. And I just look at their chart, and it had maybe a 4% slope down. And a 4% slope down, we could just plot out the future, and we kind of knew where we were headed. So we had I had a personal imperative for change, and then we had a business imperative for change. And so it took us about 18 months, maybe 2 years, to put the plan together and how we wanted to change the business, and then we set out to execute it like any plan.
Christian, you weren't in your role at the outset of sort of this conceptualizing. What was it like to kind of experience a shift from a barista standpoint? Because I just know it's different when you're sort of planning something, and then for a barista or a customer to kind of experience a change, two different positions.
Yeah, I came in a little over 8 years ago, and when I was working, it was situation normal. I understood that we were kind of like a Starbucks-y kind of place, but I was investigating specialty coffee on my own. Like, I'd go take trips down to Chicago, like, hey, man, what if we tried doing some of this? And yeah, the baristas in the cafe were like, no, we don't want to do it like that. And then when they finally announced, like, hey, we want to focus on specialty, we want to be doing this, I'm like, sign me up. Like, sign me up. I'm in for this. This is super exciting. And it was challenging. It was really challenging for a long time because not everybody held that opinion, because we built the company on customer service. And they really loved that customer service aspect. They're like, well, why are we doing this specialty coffee? It's worked for the last 20 years. It's like they didn't see the charts. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand what's going on. But, yeah, it was super exciting to jump in at it.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, everybody, I'll say everybody, but a lot of people who worked here sort of knew we were doing this sort of review, and a lot of people were saying, well, you should do this, or you should go, hey, have you been here? You should go see this. And I had a real aversion to that, because if we were going to go through a significant change and prepare the company for the future, one thing that I did know is that we weren't prepared to play catch-up. Like, if you're going to change the company radically, you don't just go to catch-up. You actually go beyond. And so the struggle that I had, and I think we got it right and we continue to work on it, was we're not just going to copy what's going on in the industry. Like, that's a recipe for always being behind. That's a recipe for being sort of average, because it's not innovative, it's not different, it's not new. So I was kind of slow to come out with the plan in terms of where we were headed, partly because I wasn't and don't want to be copying anyone. I wanted this to be some disciplined thinking about where we wanted to end up. And that's how we eventually got to it.
So how do you roll that out? How do you roll that plan out to a group of, you know, at the time, what, 80 people who are used to, as Christian said, sort of business as usual, situation normal?
Right. I think like any change, you don't roll it out all at once. You roll it out a piece at a time, and you explain why it's imperative that we change, and you invite people to participate in the change and give their input, and then you start, and then you begin to change and tweak and invite people to push it ahead. And just as Christian has talked about in other podcasts, people start kind of getting on board with the ideas, and they start doing their own stuff and pushing the business ahead in their own ways. So, you know, there is no sort of top-down at Stone Creek, and this whole process was never a top-down. It was a, here are the goals we have, and everyone just sort of gets to work. And we certainly put in some radical changes in how we design the company and our sourcing models and many other fairly significant changes, but it's been a journey of everybody.
Yeah, we'll dive into a little bit, like a few of these aspects that sort of happened, and then some of the things that have been really impactful in the company. The factory was redone, finished in what, 2012? Is that right?
Yeah, I think fall of 2012.
How did that play into this sort of reinvention? I mean, that's how we refer to it, the idea of reinventing Brew City. And for us at Stone Creek, it's kind of a daily sort of, how do we reinvent ourselves to continue to grow? So how did the factory play into that process?
Well, the factory and some other things, our Radio Milwaukee Cafe, I mean, we felt we needed to do... Like, when you're going through a change, you need to have wins, and you start with small wins so that you can get the momentum going, but you also need to kind of put some stakes in the ground, and stakes in the ground in this case were some sizable investments in quality equipment and just retooling the whole coffee program. So the factory cafe, our training center, all the lab, new roasting equipment, all of that was a big investment in craft and learning the craft again. And I say again because it's not as though we were clueless. We were just simply, reinventing, coming at the problem in different ways and giving the team tools to continue that growth. And then our Radio Milwaukee Cafe was another sort of step to that in terms of craft. And we did some things with the menu, and we did some things with the offering, and we just experimented a lot there, and we continue to experiment, and that's sort of the MO now.
One of the things we've learned in the process is that sort of that even the reinvention of yourself and doing things differently isn't necessarily enough by itself. And I remember coming into the company and you talking about the need to tell the story. At Stone Creek, it's not really just a personal story. You've made very clear you don't ever want this to be just about your personal story, but really the amalgamation of all of our stories and our journeys with coffee and the customer story. But in order to sort of communicate where we were and where we were going as a company, you had to do something a little bit differently. And that's, I think, where LPW Design Studios comes in. Patrick and Libby over there, we've been working with them for three and a half years now.
Yeah.
How did you get set up with them?
Patrick and Libby actually live near our Glendale cafe, and they had gone in there and they had sent me an email a year before we finally hired them and said, hey, your guys are doing some cool stuff, but we think that we could really help you communicate the uniqueness of what is Stone Creek. And, you know, when someone tells you, and it's all of our natural aversions, well, you're good, but you could be better and I can help you, your sort of first reaction is sort of like,
Who are you
and where'd you get my email? But I actually remember the moment where a year after they had introduced me and I sort of, the light bulb went on and I realized that we needed their help. And I think that this has also been my personal journey. When you start a company, you end up doing a lot. As I said, I work from 7 in the morning till 10 at night, and I do, and you do that for 15 years, and eventually you have a certain habit built up of you sort of doing a lot of stuff. And what I realized is that Patrick and Libby and you guys and others here at Stone Creek are way more talented than I ever could be in a certain discipline. And so one of the big shifts was I stopped doing everything and I started partnering up with people that were way more talented than I am. And Patrick and Libby are certainly in that camp.
Yeah, Patrick, particularly as a graphic designer, is sort of the voice behind the visual aesthetic of a lot of the posters you see, you know, the current Stone Creek Coffee icon and logo. I mean, all those things have kind of proceeded from Patrick, and they've really sort of given a visual voice to the brand that we've tried to represent, and what it is to be a coffee geek in Milwaukee, working to reinvent Brew City, to never stop learning. A lot of that language has come out of our work with them, and it may have been as impactful a part of our business development and future planning than any other thing, because coffee alone, and there are a lot of people who do good coffee, right? I mean, but can you differentiate yourself through something unique, through a unique look, through a unique placement, through a unique approach to the customer? You build a factory, do the Radio Milwaukee Cafe, but you got these eight other cafes, right?
Right.
Painted kind of puke green.
Well, it wasn't puke to us when we chose it, but yeah, fair enough.
It involves puke. You have a lot of, I mentioned show and tell. Eric brought a lot of stuff from the good old days downstairs. What is this? I can't believe you kept this. How old is this cup?
It's probably 20 years old.
So let's talk about your hoarding problem.
I have one box, actually, I kept of old stuff. Oh, that's not just bad, for, I guess, memories. I'm not sure.
So moving from this being the extreme to even the sort of mid-2000s design vibe, how do you address all of, like, bringing the entire company sort of with you on this journey? Because it's a lot harder than just opening a new cafe, yeah?
Yeah, in a way it would have been easier to start fresh and just shit-can the whole thing. But, of course, we wouldn't have had any money to kind of do that, so we had to, as I share with the team here, you know, building this company, the analogy I use is kind of like a train, that the front of the engine can't be, or the front of the train can't be a bright, shiny bullet train with maglev, and the back be some sort of crappy caboose that's barely holding on the tracks. So we ended up having to refresh the whole company, and we did that by going into every single cafe and investing in every single cafe, both in equipment and vibe, and now we have a really robust process for that kind of ongoing capital investment in the company. And you know, I don't want to say that we made a mistake, but I think we were late to invest in the business around the evolution of craft coffee and just where the industry was heading. So I'm just committed to never making that mistake again. So we literally went into every cafe over a 2-year period and redid it.
And it does take a lot of work to maintain. Like, just maintenance work is incredible. Like,
right.
If you have a cafe or a company of 10 cafes, wholesale operations, and you're trying to take care of all of this equipment, like, we have a team of 4 basically full-time coffee technicians to take care of 10 cafes and then our wholesale business, and they're always busy. There's never a shortage of work to do because stuff falls apart, and it's a bummer, but that's just something you have to accept. So talking more about Stone Creek's uniqueness, the push for quality, the push for our ability to tell the story in terms of our brand, I think have been very clear. Like, customers experience the quality and the visual impact on a daily basis. But some sort of behind the scenes stuff in terms of our company's evolution, not everybody sort of gets to see. I think that it definitely touches them in terms of their experience, but they don't necessarily know why. And that's this evolution in culture we've had that has kind of matched the evolution in coffee. And so I've got 3 points here that I think maybe summarize this. And let's start with the team structure of Stone Creek, because this is how I came to work at the corporate office. Was Eric opens this role after our chief or coffee operating officer, whatever her title was, like, it was a COO, chief operating officer, left. Eric opens this position for director of teams, really with the idea of making our company team run. What was the thinking going into that? Why do this?
Well, I mean, as Drew mentioned, the title COO comes from sort of a classic organizational model, which is really a military model, where you have one general, a CEO, and then you have, I guess, what, lieutenants or something, COOs and CFOs and lots of COO somethings, and then you have sort of the next level of mid managers, which would be, I don't know, private or something. I don't really know, but anyway,
general, colonel,
okay,
major.
Okay. Anyway, whatever the order is, it's a very top down sort of structure, and I realized that, as I said, early on Stone Creek, I did a lot of things. A lot of decisions ended up sort of passing through my desk in my life, and I wanted to be done with that. I felt that there was no way Stone Creek could grow if we followed that traditional model. And I had conceived of this many, many years ago, and actually the visual structure of this is a flower, and that the petals on the flower are the teams, and sort of the central sort of part of the flower is sort of our shared services, for lack of a better word, but accounting and other things like that. But so I just thought through the problem and realized that we would be better off if we were a group of equals, and we came up with this idea of there is no boss, there are no bosses at Stone Creek. There's no up down. There's no moving up or moving down. But rather, we'd have teams, team leaders, team members, and ultimately a really robust mentoring network. And that really created this constellation of coffee people who were doing their thing. And it created some real chaos in the beginning because the command structure, or that sort of top down structure that most businesses run, is built that way for control. And really, this was me coming to personal terms with, hey, if we put this in, I'm going to lose a lot of control. And, you know, many years of therapy, I was able to give up my control. And we put this team structure in, led by Drew, director of teams.
A big thing to go along with this, and I'd say this is a word you won't see thrown around a lot in the coffee industry, is this idea of performance and kind of emphasizing the performance of the people who work here. Because you've told me in the past, you know, your tendency has kind of been to keep a kumbaya, everybody's okay sort of mentality, when in actuality, if you don't guard who works at your company and how they work, they can actually tank you. And part of one of the things you told me in my interview was, hey, we have to build this culture of performance. This, maybe more than anything else in terms of an emphasis, has maybe reinvented our viability as a company. I guess talk to us about your journey from sort of kumbaya to like, hey, we actually have to get stuff done. We actually have to do things.
There are moments where there are certain imperatives, and one of the imperatives with a business is that you have to make money. And even nonprofits actually have to make money, so that you have the ability to do what you love again the next year. And what I came to realize is that I was bearing a lot of that weight in the interest of this kind of culture that I thought I wanted, which was one of caring and everything's okay. And we did come to refer to it as kumbaya culture. We didn't have a guitar. We never sang it. But the vibe was certainly there. And I did come to realize that if we were going to put the team structure in, which means I would lose less control, we actually had to offset it, sort of balance it with a different view of what performance means and how we're going to measure it and how we're going to deal with underperformers. And so this sort of cultural change came in at the same time as the team change came in. And in fact, the two were very much linked.
Parts of this have been pretty impactful. One of them being the sort of financial management of the company. Like in many companies, you'll have sort of higher level management / accounting, manage the dollars in and the dollars out, and there's not a lot of transparencies in the business. At Stone Creek Coffee, the financial management is actually managed on the team level. So there's 12 of us or so in a company of 100, you know, and we're not that big of a company, that do the financial management. And we say, this is my budget, this is how I'm going to spend my money. And then we answer to that spend in terms of how it's pushing value creation and top line growth, or how we're controlling costs to make sure that at the end of the day, we actually are net positive. And putting that control in the hands of the people who actually do the work and making them answerable for how they actually work on a day in and day out basis, I think has been a major driver of keeping us in business, and beyond that, providing sort of hope for a future in coffee. So that it's not just about one person to sort of figure it out and drive the company forward, it's everybody bringing what they can to the table and delivering something that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would just add it. That change from, you know, what would happen before is I'd get the monthly financials and then I'd sit there with my highlighter.
Panic.
And I'd go, I got to talk to this person, I got to talk to this person, I got to talk to this person, I got to talk to this person. And I'd run around for 2 weeks saying, what's your problem? What are you doing? Why aren't you fixing this? And finally, we flipped it around. We said, well, why don't we just give it to them from the beginning? And at Stone Creek, we do red-green. You're either red or you're green. There's no yellow. There's red or you're green. You're either making it or not making it. And this has been a profound change, and it's amazing how well the financials are managed now when we have 12 or 14 or 16 people plus their mentors working on it up and down the P&L versus me and my highlighter and just running around all day long. It's really been one of the watershed moments for me in terms of how to run a business.
Which is not super intuitive, because if you're relatively smart, you want to keep control. Like, the idea being, if I give up control to somebody I perceive as less smart than me, it's all going downhill from there.
But it turns out that everybody together is way smarter than the smartest person.
Right. Absolutely. I think so much of what makes Stone Creek unique now is that it isn't just one person making decisions at any given time. Like, the decisions that are made by the brain power and the wrestling and even the disagreements that happen within a team to sharpen our thinking, to make sure we know what we're doing and have a really darn good reason for everything we do. From the financials to the strategic thinking, the implementation, coffee buying, personnel placement, all of it, it's not one person. And in that sense, it really is the embodiment, and it is the product of each of our stories coming together to build kind of a unit that's pretty special.
Personal reflection, it's been a pretty cool place to work for the last 8 years. And it's been cool to see a company that's willing to grow and change and to modify and make itself better. And I think it's always a worry when you invest in a company that they're not going to want to grow or change or make themselves better. And it's been cool being part of that. It's
a funny thing I hear a lot in job interviews is people want to work for a company that doesn't want to change. Like, well, I like that you guys are local and that you're here. And so often you see big or businesses grow and then they're bad. And I'm like, well, no, that's not true. Like, you have to understand what happens in a business. And the fact is, if a business isn't changing, if a business isn't growing, then it's not going to stay. Like, it will eventually peter out. The environment and the competitors around that business will adapt and eat it away, and there won't be anything left. So, yeah, it'll be really comfortable for those last few years as you waste away and die.
I guess my reflections are that Stone Creek will continue to change with ferocity and commitment to the future, and that we're a team, not an individual, and as I continue to evolve and change, yes, I'm the founder and I'm the co-owner, but I'm not going to be here forever, and that eventually there'll be another generation of coffee people and thinkers and challengers who will innovate the company into the future, and we're already thinking about that. We're already starting to work on how that future is going to roll out, and I'm just extremely proud of the changes we've made here at Stone Creek, and now I'm happily working in the business, but I'm also happily occasionally watching from the sidelines as smart, talented people move the business ahead.
Dope. That wraps episode 30. Thanks, Eric, for being with us today. Thanks for the beer. It was yummy. Catch us in 2 weeks, per usual. He's Christian. I'm Drew. As Christian said last time, we're just making sweet coffee love to you.
I'm out.